Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. The Islamic State is claiming responsibility for the nightclub assault in Istanbul New Year's Day that left 39 dead, most of them foreigners, and wounded dozens. It said the attack was in retaliation for Turkey's presence in neighboring Syria. Turkish authorities searching for the lone gunman have arrested 8 suspects. Security analyst Metin Gürkan believes the attacker was careful in his preparations.
It was not planned as a sort of suicide mission. It was planned as an hit and run, you know, mission. The attacker, right now, he is on the run, and he planned his exit strategy, and with a network, surely, he managed to escape from the attack zone. And the second characteristic, he was not an amateurish guy.
Deputy Prime Minister Numan Kurtulmus told reporters the authorities have obtained the fingerprints and basic description of the gunman and expressed confidence his identity will be established quickly.
Hangi planı yaparsanız yapın. Türkiye teröre karşı.
The Deputy Prime Minister also said Turkey is determined to pursue its cross-border operations in Syria aimed at Islamic State and Kurdish rebels so they no longer pose a threat to his country. A senior member of Libya's Government of National Accord has quit his post. Musa Alkoni, one of 9 members of the GNA's Presidential Council, said the UN-backed administration struggling to gain political control has failed to tackle its urgent problems. He said it stood powerless to take brave and bold decisions. It's hoped the nearly one-year-old GNA will prevail over the Islamic State, various militia groups, boost the country's oil production and reduce the refugee flow to Europe. But it has also been unable to secure the backing of Libya's eastern administration. This is VOA News. Syrian rebels Monday said they've decided to put on hold any talks about their participation in peace negotiations arranged by Russia and Turkey. They're demanding an end to violations of a 5-day-old ceasefire carried out by Damascus and its Iranian-backed allies. Those talks are planned later this month in Kazakhstan. The latest fighting centers around Wadi Barada Valley, which contains vital water supplies for Damascus. President-elect Donald Trump used his Twitter account again Monday to take aim at North Korea after its leader Kim Jong-un Sunday said Pyongyang is in the final stages of preparing a test of an intercontinental ballistic missile. Mr. Trump said it won't happen, a reference to any such missile reaching U.S. territory. Cedric Layton, an international risk assessment expert and former Air Force intelligence officer, was asked if this represents a shift in U.S. policy.
It's not really a shift in U.S. policy so much as a much more vigorous explanation of U.S. policy. U.S. policy has basically called for a denuclearized Korea, both North and South, and that it would basically result in a nuclear-free area in northeastern Asia.
The president-elect also criticized China, who he said benefits from what he called one-sided trade with the U.S., but not helping out with North Korea. At least 3 people were killed Monday following 2 huge suicide car bombings near Mogadishu International Airport in Somalia. The jihadist al-Shabaab insurgency claimed responsibility. One bomber drove a car into a checkpoint outside African Union headquarters. Another drove through towards the main Amazon base before coming under fire from peacekeepers. A 17-hour prison riot involving rival gangs erupted Sunday, lasting into Monday at a Brazilian jail near the Amazonas state capital of Manaus, leaving nearly 60 inmates dead. One prison official described the violence as a revenge killing. State Security Chief Sergio Fontes said what occurred was a large gang taking on a smaller gang to eliminate competition. Dozens of inmates escaped during the riot. Some were later recaptured. Brazil's prisons are often described as underfunded and overcrowded. The son of the leader of Equatorial Guinea went on trial in France Monday, accused of plundering his country to fund his opulent lifestyle. Defendant Teodoro Obiang, the African country's vice president, was absent. His lawyers are seeking a delay in the case. He faces up to 10 years in prison if convicted of corruption, embezzlement, and money laundering. He is denied the charges. India's top court ruled that candidates for public office cannot use religion or caste in search for votes, describing the practice as corrupt. The ruling comes ahead of elections in several states, including Uttar Pradesh. President Obama said Monday he'll deliver a farewell address next week, reflecting on the success during his 8 years in office. The speech from Chicago, January 10th. I'm Victor Beatty.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte, Washington. Today is Tuesday, January 13. Here are some of the stories we are covering. Tensions are mounting in the Gambia as former President Yahya Jammeh threatens war against ECOWAS.
Any president whose term of office expires, who takes up arms, would undoubtedly be regarded as a rebel leader. This is the candid reading that any mature leader should derive from the declared position of ECOWAS and the rest of the international community.
Khalifa Salah is the spokesman for Gambian President-elect Adama Barrow. We'll have analysis of the Gambian political crisis. Burundian police have arrested a number of people in connection with the assassination of the country's environment minister. And South Sudanese are calling on their national leaders to restore peace to the country this year.
What I would like to see, that guns must be silenced. This killing all around is the one that people are talking throughout. And I hope that 2017 may it bring peace and happiness.
A South Sudanese woman from the country's Imatong state capital, Torit. Kenya establishes new rules to protect workers dealing with electronic waste recycling. Researchers investigate new treatments for leading cancers, and 2016 was a mixed bag for species conservation. Those stories plus our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A spokesman for Gambia's president-elect Adama Barrow says President Yahya Jammeh will have no constitutional mandate to be commander of the country's armed forces when his term expires later this month. Khalifa Salah says any attempt by Mr. Jammeh to stay in power will make him a rebel. As Sane M.K. Marina reports from Dakar, Senegal, the president-elect was reacting to Mr. Jammeh's claim that any deployment of a standby force by the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, to enforce the outcome of the December 2nd polls, in which he was defeated, would be a declaration of war.
Tensions are mounting in the Gambia a few weeks before outgoing President Yahya Jammeh hand over power to President-elect Adama Barrow, the duly declared winner of last month's presidential election in the Gambia.
The decision of ECOWAS on the current situation to implement the results of the December 1st, 2016 election by whatever means possible is totally illegal, as it violates the principle of non-interference in the internal affairs of member states, which is an entrenched clause in the ECOWAS treaty. It is in effect a declaration of war, an insult to our constitution. It is therefore absolutely unacceptable. This blatant, impartial, and one-dimensional approach clearly indicates that the role of ECOWAS is not predicated on the pursuit of justice in the resolution of this statement.
Reacting to Jammeh's New Year message at a press conference today in Banjul, President-elect Adama Barrow spokesperson Khalifa Salah said when Jammeh's term expires in a few weeks, he would not have any constitutional mandate to be the commander-in-chief of armed forces, and any attempt to stay in power will make him a rebel.
Any president whose term of office expires, who takes up arms, would undoubtedly be regarded as a rebel leader. This is the candid reading that any mature leader should derive from the declared position of ECOWAS and the rest of the international community.
ECOWAS leaders met Jammeh in Banjul last month and urged him to step down after a fact-finding mission. Jammeh said their meeting was a mere formality and warned the bloc not to violate the sovereignty of the country. After initially accepting the result, Jammeh later rejected it, alleging irregularities, and filed a petition to the Supreme Court, which is due to be reviewed on January 10. Opposition leader says that Jammeh initially accepted defeat and called the election the most transparent in the world. The United Nations, African Union, the EU and the OIC are supporting the ECOWAS resolution adopted by West African leaders in Abuja, Nigeria, who say Jammeh's refusal to leave is a threat to the stability of the region. Meanwhile, President Jammeh has ordered the closure of two private radio stations after the station air debates on the country political crisis, in which panelists were very critical of Yahya Jammeh. Secret Service agent from the National Intelligence agency were dispatched to Taranga FM and Hilltop Radio Station to enforce the order, according to report from Banjul. No official reason has been forwarded by authorities for the closure. It is the fourth time Taranga FM has been closed and the second for Hilltop Radio. Reporting for VOA Daybreak Africa, I am Seni MK Marina in Dakar, Senegal.
As Gambian President Yahya Jammeh tries to tighten his grip on power, marked most recently by his closure of a popular radio station, regional bloc ECOWAS continues to urge him to step down later this month. Senegal will lead a military intervention if ECOWAS deemed one necessary should Jammeh continue his call for new elections rather than acknowledge the results of the December 2nd polls. Matthias Hompe is the administrator for Open Society Initiative of West Africa's Political Governance Program. He talks to Ricky Stryak about what these developments in the Gambia could mean for nearby Senegal.
ECOWAS has not said that they are preparing to attack militarily the Gambia. But what they have said many times is that all the options are on the table, including the military option. What everybody prioritized so far is the diplomatic option.
With Senegal slated to lead any military intervention that might happen, could this have a negative effect on somewhere like Casamance in southern Senegal, where there have been rebels in the past?
I guess that, I mean, that is one of the Senegal's interests in what is happening in the Gambia. Because a Gambia which is not stable will offer opportunity for the Casamance rebels, for instance, to be able to have a kind of rooms to go out from the country and come back and organize some actions and so on. So a Gambia unstable or a government in Gambia that is not in a good relationship with Senegal can be helpful for rebel groups like the ones in Casamance and so on. But we have to say that Gambia cannot consider that there are just forces that are there that can be instrumentalized at will. So these people also have their own agenda, they have their own goals and so on. So I'm not sure that they are just there and Jammeh and his groups can make use of them as they want.
Do you think Jammeh is trying to negotiate the manner in which he will step down so that maybe he doesn't face human rights violations? Because he's talking like someone who does not want to leave at all.
No, I know. But in fact, I think I'm quite sure that he knows that. Staying or hanging on to power will be really difficult for him because ECOWAS and the international community have the means to force him down. But we need to take also something into account because for somebody like Jammeh to have stayed in power for so long, so some military officers should also be concerned for what happens after he stepped down. So the negotiation cannot be Yahya Jammeh alone. So I think what is going on now is Jammeh may be partly prisoner of a group of military people who also have concerns. If there have to be prosecution of the previous mass violation that we are talking about.
Matthias Hompe is the administrator for Open Society Initiative of West Africa's Political Governance Program. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Dakar, Senegal. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, January 3rd. And please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 14 minutes past the hour. Police in Burundi say they have arrested a number of people for questioning in connection with the assassination of the country's environment minister, 54-year-old Emmanuel Niyonduru. Reporter Moses Javier Rimana in Bujumbura says the police believe the killer was also in the car with the minister. He says the police have also arrested the minister's wife.
We understand that the police spokesman, Peter Greek, said that more suspects have been arrested in the assassination of the environment minister, who was assassinated on the 31st of the night where he was coming from a bar. Now the police say actually those who killed the minister were inside his own car and the attack didn't come from outside the car.
Did you say two suspects?
It's actually more than two suspects, but those two included his wife and one bodyguard who were inside the car, who are said to, whereby the police says they the attack would have happened with the people who were together with the minister inside the car, and that the attack wasn't outside. So it was just inside, and those who shot him were with him inside the car. That's according to the police.
So why arrest the wife? Was there any family problem?
The police spokesman said that possibly she has also delivered some information regarding the other suspects, according to the police spokesman, Perry Quick, whom I spoke to earlier on. And he said that possibly he could have a relevant information about exactly what happened in the car, since he was together with the minister in the car and during the attacker, which is said to have been the killer who was inside the car.
You know, Moses, your country, Burundi, has been rocked by all kinds of political crises since the past 2 years. So the first thing that perhaps come to the minds of people like us on the outside is, was there a political motivation in the assassination of this minister?
Well, currently, according to the government and the police, are saying that they are really trying to get out just to make an investigation concerning about the matter. But concerning about the history on how this have been developing on and on, we remember that last month also the senior advisor of Burundi President Pierre Nkurunziza escaped an attack whereby his bodyguard was shot dead. And remember that earlier on this year, also, the member of Burundi was also attacked and killed nearby her home with this targeted assassination. And we have continually seeing this targeted assassination ongoing since the political crisis began. So it's not the first time the government officials have been targeted by unknown armed groups. But there have not been any group or member who has just come out to claim these attacks.
I asked the question because some information we are getting is that perhaps this environment minister has been perhaps critical of the ruling CNDD party because of the attempt to grab land from people, which some people say he was against. Was he targeted? If this is true now?
No, I don't think if this is the case, because what we understand is that the current situation and also the environment minister was a ruling party member. So I don't think if exactly that was the real cause behind his assassination. Rather, it could be politically motivated and possibly those who are opposing the Burundi government.
So before I let you go, what happened? Have they released the wife or is she still in detention?
Well, the latest information we had is that actually they are still under detention and the investigation is ongoing with the intelligence services. According to the police, he said that more people have been arrested, including the bar owner where the minister was coming from drinking.
Moses, thank you very much for the update and Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year, James Buddy.
That was reporter Moses Haviarimana speaking with us from the Burundian capital, Bujumbura. South Sudanese are calling on their national leaders to restore peace across the country this year during a New Year celebration in the Imatong state capital, Torit. Many said they have suffered for far, far too long and want their leaders to end the violence, which they say has forced hundreds of thousands of South Sudanese into refugee camps. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports from Torit.
Hundreds of Christians sang hymns as they prayed for blessings in the new year at Our Lady of the Holy Rosary in Torit. Some parishioners say 2016 was an extremely difficult year because hunger and violence forced tens of thousands to flee the country. They also say the deteriorating economy made living conditions unbearable. But many also say they are hopeful that in 2017 the country's leaders will learn to resolve their difference peacefully. One of them is Torit resident Margaret Idua.
What I would like to see that guns must be silenced, because that's the only thing that is disturbing people. This killing all around is the one that people are talking throughout. And I hope that 2017 may it bring peace and happiness.
Another Torit resident, William Wani, agrees.
We need peace dialogues between those who are in the bush and those who are in the town, like government and the rebels. People are crying for peace, peace, peace. We are not seeing the peace. But this year, 2017, we are crying as the Christian, actually. We need a peace to become in South Sudan, actually, especially in our area in Eastern Equatorial State, whereby we are not seeing peace. Now most of the people, they leave the country because of the war.
Idwa says she too wants to see better living conditions for her family and others in Imotong State.
I see forward that may something big happen to my family this year that can take me forward, that can take me to help the people of South Sudan. And especially the most thing which is touching my family is always our children that are roaming around.
Torit resident Gilda Boutros is also thankful to be alive, but says peace must come in 2017.
In actual sense, I'm not happy. I will only be happy when I see peace is actually realized by everybody in South Sudan.
Father Noel Ogwogu, who officiated over New Year's Day Mass at Our Lady of the Holy Rosary, says South Sudanese leaders and citizens must change their attitudes. Quoting Pope Francis' message on New Year's, traditionally known as the Day of Peace, Ogwogu asked for God's blessing on South Sudan and urged its leaders to restore peace in the country.
Holy Father is telling us in our politics to adopt the political style of non-violence. There is political style of corrupt and I corrupt. There is political style of thief, I thief. There is political style of kill, I kill. But the Holy Father has condemned all that.
And Father Ogwogu urges all South Sudanese to strive to put their country back together in 2017. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Torit.
Scientists are investigating new ways of treating people with liver cancer. The methods range from developing an artificial liver to seeing if genetically modified pigs can produce organs compatible with humans. VOA's Carol Pearson reports on yet another approach being taken at the University of Missouri.
For those who have liver cancer, their only cure lies in a liver transplant or removal of the cancerous part of the organ. Both require major surgery, and patients who get a transplant will need to take immunosuppressant drugs for the rest of their lives. However, scientists are working on a new approach that is minimally invasive. With both chemotherapy and radiation, healthy cells around the tumor are damaged. But this approach involves the use of natural, non-toxic chemical compounds from plants. Katesh Kati, a professor at the University of Missouri School of Medicine, led a study that used nanotechnology to target and destroy precancerous tumor cells in the livers of mice and in vitro human cells.
It sounds like a fairy tale, but we are really in advanced stages in terms of tumor treatment, in terms of disease diagnostics.
Kati's work involved very small particles of gold encapsulated in a protective stabilizer from an acacia tree. The particles attract precancerous and malignant cells, which are far more susceptible to lower levels of heat than healthy cells.
The patient would be administered with these nanoparticles. Within a couple of hours, the patient would be treated with lasers, and then the patient can go home. So there is no radioactivity, there is no toxic waste, there is no systemic toxicity to the patient.
Kati says the cost of treatment will be low because 1 gram of gold can be used to treat 50 patients. And what's more, Kati says this type of treatment could be used for other types of cancer, for arthritis and other debilitating diseases. The next step is a clinical trial in humans. Should this technique work, it will be good news for the nearly 800,000 people who are diagnosed with liver cancer each year, and it could help save the lives of some 700,000 people who die each year from the disease. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
When a computer or cell phone is no longer needed, it often ends up in the trash. But modern electronics contain a host of valuable metals that can be recovered and reused, as well as dangerous chemicals. The recycling process can be hazardous, and the toxins can poison the workers who sift through the discarded equipment without safety gear. So, as Rebecca Ward reports, Kenya has established regulations to protect them.
Workers at a recycling plant in Kenya dismantle computers, phones, and other electronic equipment, saving the valuable bits like copper, silver, and gold, and safely discarding more dangerous chemicals like mercury.
We'll spend money to treat this mercury because it has negative values. That's why the regulation comes in.
Vicky Andera is with East African Compliant Recycling in Nairobi. The company collects about 59,000 kilograms of e-waste every month for safe disposal. But much of the world's used electronics actually end up in dumps in the developing world, where they are often burned or taken apart unsafely. So Kenya is the first African country to draft legislation requiring e-waste to be handled at government-licensed facilities.
I'm glad to say that Kenya is the only country with the e-waste regulation which has been passed, which is in Parliament.
Across the globe, consumers threw away as much as 50 million metric tons of e-waste last year. I'm Rebecca Ward for VOA's Green Beat.
Human-impacted climate change, habitat loss, and hunting have led to some pretty grim statistics when it comes to maintaining the planet's biodiversity. VOA's Kevin Enoch looks back at 2016 in wildlife conservation.
The parade of biodiversity on the planet is stunning. Unfortunately, it is increasingly at risk. According to the International Union for Conservation of Nature, 41% of all amphibians and 25% of mammals are under threat. One of the newest additions to the red list of vulnerable species is the giraffe. This long-necked beauty is finding less and less room to roam.
People started clearing down vegetation to create room for agriculture. So in the process, the giraffes started dying due to lack of food. And also human beings used to kill them in case they invaded in the crop field.
This is Sudan, the last male northern white rhino left alive on the planet, and the future of his species rests on his aging shoulders. Rhinos are being poached to extinction for their horns, prized as an aphrodisiac in some Asian cultures. To save the species, conservationists are dehorning rhinos to deter poachers. But even that drastic measure might not be enough.
The day might come when all the rhinos are dehorned, and it's still worth killing a rhino for just that 400 or 500 grams of horn, because the price of rhino horn is so huge that, you know, it's worth killing it for a small half a kg.
And a new survey showed the African savanna elephant population has dropped 30% from 2007 to 2014 and is declining at about 8% every year. But in other areas, there are too many elephants, and conservationists have begun relocation projects to help restore populations to their historical ranges. Other animals are getting harder to find, like Grevy's zebra. There are only about 2,500 left in the world. The orangutan and their great ape cousins, the gorillas, are both critically endangered, and conservationists believe South Africa's great white shark may also be facing possible extinction. But it is not all bad news. The elusive snow leopard has made a comeback, and trackers estimate there are as many as 140 in Afghanistan's Wakhan National Park.
That's VOA's Kevin Enoch reporting. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of African news. At least 7 people were killed and 17 others injured in 2 huge suicide car bombs near Mogadishu International Airport on Monday. And that's it for this Tuesday, January 3rd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, along with our engineer Charles Hall, I'm James Butte in Washington saying, have a nice day, Africa.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz and 15580 kilohertz. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT. On the internet, you can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.